One of the very quick things.
Very quickly then.
Some guy posted on his weblog to say, for what it's worth, I've been listening to Lug Radio and it's a pretty good Linux podcast, although it does tend to have some language at times.
Yes, but, we're not work safe, I'm afraid.
No, the point is, it has language. Perhaps he was expecting us to make fucking clicking noises.
Of course it's got language.
No, let's do it now. Let's talk. Let's just talk for a second in clicking.
Welcome to Lug Radio.
Lug Radio.
Lug Radio, Season 2, Episode 13. Not 13,
I'm scared.
I'm scared.
This is our first 13th episode, because the first season ended at Episode 12.
It did.
Before the summer break. So this is our first 13th episode.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
So fucking... So it's fucking bad luck to Aid.
Oh, this is bad. Because he's bald.
Yeah. After this, I'm fired.
Incidentally, Aid, your phone looks like it's off. Are you off call?
I am off call and...
And you're bald as well.
I'm still bald. I'm a little bit hirsute.
Ladies and gentlemen, Aid Badshaw, off-call bald.
Yes.
Who else is on the show?
Eh?
Who else is on the show?
On the show?
I'm on the show.
Mike Hurd is on the show.
Hurd?
Hurd?
Hurd. The Hurd.
Mike Hurd.
Mike Hearn is on the show.
Yes. Yes. So, let's introduce ourselves.
Very well.
We said we were going to do this.
Yeah.
So, the transcription people, who are incidentally... transcribing the show.
Yep.
At
wiki.lugradio.org, so get along there and you will see half a show being transcribed, but they're working on it, and good luck to them.
So you've already heard the on-call bald. Who are you, you ginger bastard?
I'm Stuart Langridge.
Stuart Langridge, and I am John O'Bacon. We haven't got a Matt Revelle today. Matt is not here. I blame him.
As do I. I'm afraid he was just too short to attend a meeting. So,
actually, yeah. The new mic stands are too tall. He's just he's jumping up and down.
He's actually here. He just can't reach a mic.
No, we're recording on a different night, and unfortunately, it clashes with his glass making university course, whatever the fuck. So,
just make glasses.
He's not here. So, yeah, what should we talk about? Let's talk to Mike Hearn.
Let's talk to Mike Hearn from the Auto Package Project.
Yes.
We're going to have a little bit of a rant, surely.
Yeah.
By the way, the show could contain swearing.
The Lug Radio Angry Minute is coming.
It is. What else did we? What else should we talk about?
I want to talk about, talk about hardware hacking.
Keep going. Hardware hacking, yeah.
Hardware hacking.
And a certain magazine needs to be pimped, I believe.
Yeah, by Jono, I want a fucking retainer from O'Reilly Bacon.
Shut your face. I'm not on commission. Let's also talk about the wobbly windows.
Yep. The Red Hat wobbly window thing.
Yeah, this isn't some kind of pornographic version of Microsoft Windows.
Red Hat?
Microsoft Wobbly Windows 2005.
Sponsored by your windows wobble.
I'm going to bang you so hard your windows will wobble.
Thank you.
Anyway, I've also got my friend has come along. Do you want to hear him?
Go on.
Hey, the cow's back.
Yes, and let's not forget... So the cow's back.
I'm actually thoroughly looking forward to see how the transcription goes. I'm going to write that down.
You know the transcription thing, is it another one of these has submitted no packages things?
No.
That's actually happening.
No, they've done half a show or so far, because on the forum some guy said it would be really good if we could do Spanish transcriptions of it, but I'm not very good at English, so I'd need to work from a written English transcription of the show.
Okay.
And we went, some guys did this right at the beginning and then chucked it in. And some other guys went, we'll do it. And we went, here is wiki.lugradio.org to do it on. Go for it.
You hate wikis.
I didn't set it up.
Oh, you mean it's not running PyWiki?
No,
it's running MediaWiki, because it's a lot better for lots and lots of people looking at it.
God.
Yeah, so it's an action-packed show.
Yep. Stay tuned.
Let's pack it with action.
Let's pack it with some fat boy action. Let's go.
Okay, so up until recently, if you're downloading a new piece of software, if you're running Red Hat, you're looking for RPMs.
Yes.
If you're running a Debian-based distro...
That's
drunk in the jungle. You might be looking for Debs. Failing that, you're hoping for a gzip file or something like that, or whatever.
Yeah, and if you're a fucking nutcase, use Gentoo.
Well, exactly. But yeah, there's something called Auto Package. It's hoping to change all that.
Hi.
I think it'd be a good idea to get that bloke on a phone.
Yep. That guy, what's he called? He's called Mike Hearn.
Let's speak to Mike Hearn.
Speak to Mike.
Hello?
Hi, Mike.
Don't worry about that. That's fine.
Hi, Mike. You're on Lug Radio.
Hi.
How's it going? What was that?
That was just the phone going crazy. Ignore it.
Fair enough. Well, you're on Lug Radio. So, Mike, give us a quick introduction to what Auto Package is all about.
Right, okay. It's essentially a distribution-neutral installer COM package hybrid format, which upstream open-source projects can use to distribute their software to end users. That is the basic idea for any Linux user, no matter what distribution they're running.
Okay, so the key point really is that it's vendor-neutral.
Yes.
What I'm really interested to know is, how does it handle, you know how different distros store their files in different locations and things like that? How does it handle that?
Well, there are a variety of techniques. I mean, actually, when I first started the project a few years ago, I thought, the biggest problem is file locations and where things are. And it turns out that isn't actually true at all.
Is it not? Right, okay, is that a misconception?
No, it is essentially quite a large misconception. I mean, the biggest one I can think of is Susie putting KDE in a different location to everyone else, basically.
That's
the only one I can think of. And generally, most things are taken care of automatically by the standard path mechanisms and linked configuration.
Yeah, I didn't realise that.
So that really isn't as much of a problem as you might think.
But isn't there, if you look at, say, Debian systems, they tend to hold things like, if you look at network configuration, that goes in, et cetera, network interfaces on Red Hat, it's in, et cetera, sysconfig something or other. Is that not an issue, or do you not expect the auto packages will be fiddling with things at that lower level?
Yeah, I mean, essentially the latter. Installers should not, third-party applications and so on, should not be modifying your network configuration. In fact, in future, there may be, permissions, SE Linux, that sort of system, to stop things doing exactly that. If you're installing something which is modifying your network configuration, maybe that should be shipped by your distribution. There's nothing in the system which stops you trying to do that. You can use any scripts you like, as with most package formats, but we don't recommend people try that.
Okay, cool. I mean, you go to great lengths on the site saying basically that you're not trying to replace RPMs or Debs or apt-get or stuff like that, and this is for people like producing third-party apps, as you say. So the idea is that they could just create one package rather than having to create lots of different packages.
Right, yeah.
What's the learning curve like on creating these packages? How difficult is it to write an auto?
Is it tough?
It's not all that difficult at all. There are two parts. The first thing, unlike most package formats, you're expected to modify the source of the program you're packaging in order to do this, which is why we recommend you are the same people as writing the software in the first place. So you're expected to make it binary relocatable, so you can install it to your home directory or to some other part, prefix, whatever you want. It's expected that if you have a lot of dependencies, you would try and make things easier for your user by making them, optional, weak linked, that sort of thing.
Right.
And these will involve modifications to source. These modifications are very trivial and are normally just sort of a case of mechanically search and replace sort of thing.
Right.
But actually making the package itself is very straightforward. It's like making an RPM. You just write a spec file and feed it to a program and out pops the package.
Okay.
Awesome. A sort of related question. At the moment, obviously, if you look at Debian, for instance, I'm an Ubuntu user, I tend to think in Debian terms. You've got the Debian core system, but there's also an awful lot of arbitrary third-party packages which are also packaged by Debian developers. Now, the upstream people, if auto package takes off, which hopefully it will presumably start releasing auto packages for those packages, but they'll also be in the Debian archive. Now, are you seeing that the Debian package version should go away, or that auto package should cooperate with the Debs, or are you essentially viewing that as not being your problem?
A little bit of all three. I mean, obviously, the existing system is out there, and that's what everyone's running, so we have to deal with that. And that's what native package manager integration is about. It's about registering with dpackage and RPM and so on, so that if you do install something via auto package, and then apt won't try and blindly overwrite it at some point in future, and they'll play nicely with each other. So if a library is installed by auto package, either directly by the user or through auto package's own dependency resolution, everything continues to play nicely.
Yeah.
We've got actually a couple of people working on that right now, so hopefully that should appear in the next few months sometime. But in terms of, whether they're supposed to go away or whatever, as long as people are interested in maintaining the Debian repositories, they'll be there. And, people will always have the option of, if there's also an auto package and a package to their own distribution, can choose which one they want
quickly,
to use.
Just very quickly, you talked about there's people working on that. I'm interested to know how many people are actually working on a project at the moment.
Let's see. There were about five before the 1.0 release, and now another few people have appeared and are working on patches, but they haven't sent anything in yet. So about sort of seven, I would guess. We're all volunteers,
so
it's all done in our spare time.
So, Mike, obviously, auto package is providing another option in terms of easing the Linux package installation challenge that a lot of people have talked about. How much buy-in do you think you're going to get from people? I mean, this can only really work if
for example, I mean, do you still work at Crossover?
I work for Codeweavers.
Yeah, I mean, for example, if Codeweavers were to distribute their software as an auto package, and Nero, and you know, and these other commercial tools, do you think there's going to be a lot of buy-in on this?
Sure, I hope so. I mean, at the moment, we're basically focusing on open source projects, as commercial vendors normally have it down pat. I don't know if there'll be an auto package of Crossover in the future. I could certainly do one, but at the same time, a lot of the things which auto package provides are about making the sort of things we go out of our way to do at Codeweavers much easier for open source projects. So we've got tools like AP Build, like Relay Tool and so on, which people can use, which we've already set up internally, and then we have our own versions and so on. We'll provide Loki setups and devs and RPMs for Crossovers. So
because it'd be a lot nicer than the... It would be a lot nicer than the Loki installer that you've got on.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at phasing out the Loki installer sometime soon. At the moment, auto packages aren't always fully self-contained. You can make them that way, but it's kind of not so well tested.
Right.
And
yeah.
Maybe once we've got a flood of open source projects coming in and, you know, stress testing our tools and reporting bugs and things at the moment. So once they're taken care of, yeah, I mean, I hope so. I know VMware are interested in it as well.
Really? Oh, awesome.
So if I can push it inside Codeweavers as well,
that'd be a good thing. That'd be fantastic.
If anything else, it's another option. I don't think we'll stop providing devs and RPMs for people. Although, even though the contents are actually identical between all three.
Yeah,
sure.
Something else I wanted to talk about. I used to use the ROX desktop.
Yeah.
You can see where this is going, I
suppose. Yeah.
And when I first heard about AutoPackage, I thought, brilliant, is it application folders? And then I discovered a reasonably well thought out and written, I don't want to call it a rant, about why it's not application folders and why they don't work.
They can work in certain situations. I mean, in the original RISC OS, they did actually work pretty well, but that was a much simpler time, and
you
tended not to have lots of programs on that because, you know, the internet and stuff wasn't really... I don't think RISC OS even supported TCP/IP.
Yeah, but, no, I mean, I understand the point that the world was quite a lot simpler, and RISC OS packages tended not to have dependencies particularly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I spent a while looking at the AppDIR principle, and library directories and so on and so forth. And there's a dependency problem there. I agree. But other than that, your arguments seem to be things like that the Mac people have abandoned them.
Well, that's not so much an argument. It's more an observation.
Okay.
You know, they've tried quite hard to make it work, and it does sometimes, but sometimes it doesn't. And they haven't been able to sort of nail it for everything. Even Apple don't use that. You could implement app folders on Linux. I mean, obviously there's a problem of dependencies, but this is what prompted Thomas Leonard to go off and do Xero install.
Yeah, absolutely.
A very interesting solution to the problem. If I was designing an operating system from scratch, then I'd probably do something like that because it's a good idea. But we're not. Yeah. We've got Linux and it's out there and people are using it. So
I'm with you on that. I think if we were building the whole thing right from the beginning and Xero installs around, it'd be great.
If we were building an OS from scratch, it would be pretty differently to how Linux is done. That's not a luxury we have.
That's
so
true. Yeah.
I'm telling Linus you said that.
I'm sure he won't take offence. I mean, you can build some pretty cool stuff just on top of the kernel as long as you throw away everything else.
That's not very nice thing to say.
Well, you know, I mean, if someone wants to go ahead and do... you can install a package of 20 prefix and then you can move them around later if you're determined enough. So if someone wants to go and do app folders on top of auto package, go for it.
Right, something I saw fairly recently, which I was slightly disappointed in, Joey Hess from the Debian Project being rather mean about auto package.
Yeah, really? Well, that's not unique to Joey or Debian, I'm afraid. There's quite a lot of distribution developers. I mean, we've had some sort of fairly sharp comments from Gentoo and Mandrake, but this was expected, shall we say.
Yeah, Susie and Mandrake.
We've had these sorts of comments all throughout the 3 years of the project, so we've got fairly thick skins.
Do you think you could briefly summarise the sorts of arguments you're getting there and your response to them?
I mean, might as well start with Joey Hess's post, because that sort of, people tend to link to that a lot, and it comes up quite a lot. Might as well not mince my words. Once you sort through all the crap, his point seems to be you can't pass it with Alien, which isn't something we care about at all. So, I think the thing is, Joey's treating it as a traditional package format, which, to be fair, I mean, it is called Auto Package. That's a slightly misleading name, where it's actually some kind of hybrid. So being able to split it apart and, you know, pass its contents and stuff without actually running any code is quite limiting in a lot of ways.
Right.
right, you can do it right now. I mean, you can open up the stub, and there's even like command line options for if you don't mind running the stub code
yeah.
to extract it and just get the contents out. But in future, we're going to do things like we're going to switch to LZMA compression because that's better compression than BZIP2, which is what we use right now, and it's faster. We've been looking at switching to LLVM for the bytecode format, so we can ship sort of pure architecture-neutral packages that optimize themselves for whatever hardware you've got at install time. None of these things would be possible if we had to support people like doing random things with the contents of the packages, because it's the way it's designed is the framework abstracts what's inside the package, and that's an implementation detail which we reserve the right to change at any point without notice. And that was Jerry's main point, and he said, oh, well, you know, I can't do this, therefore it must be badly designed. which is a kind of a closed-minded view.
It is a touch, isn't it? It
is not designed to meet Joey's goals. It's our goals.
It sounds very similar to Axe,
you know, what can I say? I don't find his post at all convincing.
Good.
I'm not surprised if he's not listening to this, but if he is listening to this, I'm sure he appreciates your views. One thing I'd like to shift the focus a little bit to the talk of you know, Code Weavers and the work that you're doing there.
Okay.
What do you actually work on at Code Weavers?
Well, I'm a Wine developer, so I work on fixing bugs, adding support for new programs. I mean, I worked on adding Lotus Notes support. In fact, I was working for that today. I was
evil,
trying to track
Lotus
down
Notes.
A regression in Lotus Notes.
Right.
We have a lot of IBM employees who come screaming at us if anything in Notes breaks. So I've had them chasing me recently. At the moment, I'm working on improving Install Shield support. At the moment, we rely on some Microsoft code for that, but we're going to replace it pretty soon.
Because the reason why I'm interested in talking to you about this is because there's been some sort of rumblings recently that Wine is getting to a point now where it's making quite noticeable improvements in terms of support for Windows applications.
Yeah.
I think it was actually somebody at Code Weavers who said that it'll be able to run most software. I mean, what are your thoughts on it? I'm guessing by your tone, Mike, that you're not entirely convinced.
Well, every so often, Jeremy White, that's my boss, so I can't say anything too bad about him. He's on holiday at the moment, though, so we'll see.
So he's a bastard for 2 weeks.
In 2005, we will run X% of Windows applications, and this is great for boosting morale in the team.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of sometimes I'm a bit pessimistic, but I've been proven wrong before, and Jeremy's been involved with Wine much longer than I have. And it is true that, I mean, the project has grown enormously in the past year or so. When I first got involved, we were having, like, I don't know, 1-2 mega patches a month. And it's now, like, 8 or 9 mega patches a month. And I haven't been involved with Wine for that long. I'm seen as a newcomer. So in that time, you know, the project has easily tripled the volume of patches it's processing and generating.
Cool.
Yeah, sure.
Just very briefly, do you think that it's a good or bad sign that Microsoft has started to deliberately target Wine
for
disinclusion?
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jeremy was over the moon when I told him this. He loved it. Basically, yeah, it's a great sign. Because up until now, they haven't ignored us at all. They've always had a very high internal awareness. And I've actually sort of met and talked to Microsoft developers in a previous life before I was involved with Linux. And yeah, I mean, they knew about it inside out. Even people who weren't on the Windows team knew what Wine was. Even
quite
detailed things like the difference between Wine and Wine X, as it was called back then, and so on.
Right.
In fact, this was a guy on the Microsoft Passport team I was talking to back when I was working on digital identity and stuff. And yeah, he knew all about it. But that was the first time they've sort of publicly acknowledged it in a sort of official way. And this means that, you know, they decide they can't ignore it anymore. They've sort of moved on to the laughing at it stage. And at some point, it'll become the case. I mean, it's really a plug they can't block or close. Or
that's it,
or it's a real weak spot for them.
So we've moved from the first they ignore you to the then they laugh at you stage, and presumably next is then you win, as I recall.
Isn't there a fight stage?
I mean,
at some point?
I think we've still got a few major hurdles to overcome in
one or two, perhaps.
After we've sort of got over those bumps, I think it's going to start being a downhill run.
Yeah.
You know, huge things which have been causing the project problems for years, since time immemorial, we're finally nailing. The DCOM work that I'm doing with Rob Sherman is an excellent example of that.
Right.
It has been years, and very, very few people understand it. Really, only 4 people in the world have ever worked on DCOM in Wine. We're finally sort of nailing these problems once and for all.
Cool, that's good news,
This is great stuff. Unfortunately, we could talk to you for hours, Mike, but unfortunately, time has beat us to it. So we'd like to all thank you for coming on the show.
Matt would like to thank you as well.
Unfortunately, Matt can't make it here tonight.
So, can we catch up with him?
We'd love to catch up with you for a 5-minute update at some point in the future. We're going to just ring people up and see how they're doing. So if that's all right with you. Fantastic. Take care, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you very much. You too.
Bye-bye.
So, we're all open source people.
Yes.
Yep. Yes. And one of the things about
yes,
open source...
Sorry, yes.
He just sat there with his thumbs in my general direction.
In your what?
In my arse.
Oh, general direction.
General direction.
Anyway.
Remember, he's like Colonel Sun.
I knew him when he was a sergeant.
I thought you just knew his private. Anyway, moving swiftly.
Anyway, yes. Open source is traditionally heralded towards software. And I'm interested because recently, I've been reading a book about Apple and how they made the Mac, and a lot of that's to do with hardware hacking. And there's also the Make magazine from O'Reilly, and it seems there's a bit of a resurgence of hardware hacking. Do you think it's happening?
No.
I'd like to think it is. I remember a while back on a cover magazine they did. I don't know if you guys saw this one. They did
Playboy.
You could build your own IR infrared transmitter.
Oh, right.
And it came with the software, and you could teach it all the codes for your video, and then you could actually program your video using your computer.
Right.
But you had to, like, solder all the components onto the little tiny... what do they call them? Breadboards or something?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Bread bins.
Boards. Not bread bins, yeah. John.
No, seriously, it's a bread bin. You put bread in it.
It's a breadboard.
It's breadboard.
So, well, I made an IR thing in my bread bin. Is that not normal?
In no way is that normal.
Carry on.
Now, if you put a webcam inside individual. Your bread bin...
The key thing there, I think, is... When I've seen things like that before,
mm-hmm.
You're soldering stuff on the breadboard, but the thing you buy, the key central part of it, is an infrared detecting LED. And that does all the work. You're not doing any particular...
Well, the software does quite a bit of the work as well.
Well, yeah, but then it's software hacking again. I mean, that's not very interesting.
The software was already made. You had to make the kit. You had to assemble the kit. You didn't make the kit.
But the point about the kit is that you're buying essentially a ready-made thing. There's not a lot between buying a special...
It's just an LED with two metal pins sticking out of it.
Yeah, but
you're not buying the whole... You're not buying a television.
That's not really
remote.
Hardware hacking.
No.
That's basically
just assembling bits.
Programming custom hardware.
That's
like PIC programming, you know. Like
so you're talking way back at the level of kind of Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, that kind of... I mean...
You seriously need to listen to his IT conversations. They're fascinating. Even though he went on to do evil things, the talks are very, very interesting.
Woz wasn't very evil. I mean, he got out of it because it was evil.
Jobs was the evil one in many ways.
Right, okay. I'm quite prepared to accept that. But it was fascinating listening to him talk about how he was trying to customise the number of transistors on a chip and get it down. Not because he needed to, just because it was more pure. If he only had to fit five. Yeah,
I think part of the problem there, though, is that in those days it was the very, very early days of the field.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that 100 years ago... You could get into physics and spend a couple of afternoons reading, and then you'd be kind of there or thereabouts of what was
going
on in the world.
Yeah,
but now there's no way you could become any kind of reasonably reputable, up-to-date physicist without spending 10 years studying it. I mean, there's so much of it to know.
That's true.
You're not going to compete with Intel by bolting shit together in your garage.
I mean, the thing is
it's true. I mean, it's only ever going to be interesting. You're not going to...
But this is it. I mean, the whole point of it is that you're not going to be competing with Intel. I mean, the whole point of this hardware hacking, in many ways, is to create fun things. It's the equivalent of software hacking, but in hardware. I mean, one guy in this...
It's like programming, basically.
I mean, one guy in this Apple book...
Except there's no Python.
I can't remember who it was, but someone said that, like, real hackers build their own hardware first.
Mm.
And when you read the book, I mean, it's called Revolution in the Valley. It's brilliant. And it literally chronicles how the Mac was built, right from when...
It's about Wales.
Eh? Not Revolution in the Valleys, no.
Oh, right, okay.
Ooh, very exciting.
The Great Potato Wars.
What's that, is it? It's a Mac, isn't it? Is it? Everyone in Wales
got one button, is it?
Always got one button. Very exciting.
When did you have quiet finished?
Sorry.
Anyway. Hang on a minute. That was Ack dragging us back to the plot.
That's weird, isn't it? What the fuck's that about? But, yeah, I mean, for example, the Mac was actually created from five different boards by the guy, I think it's called Burrell Smith, who built it. And it's fascinating how, like you say, they had certain limitations and they'd have to work in a low memory environment. But everything was written in assembler as well. So these guys were already pretty technical, you know. I mean, and I agree with you in many ways, like, in the fact that things have moved on a lot, so it's less necessary. But the idea of building things like...
Bloody interesting to get back to that kind of level,
Doing things like building a credit card reader.
Why didn't we do that at school?
I know. That's exactly electronics.
What bullshit things were we doing at school that we should not have been doing?
Ah, bloody fucking
history.
Communication studies. Communication studies was arse.
Isn't that what your degree's in?
No. My degree's in astrophysics.
Interactive multimedia bullshit.
It's in astrophysics.
No, it isn't. I mean, I see your point. I see your point about getting into the whole hardware hacking thing, but I don't know what you could build that would be even remotely useful. You know, I mean, what would you build?
Remote
if you tried to get into hardware.
But hacking is not always about being useful.
Well, no, but the point is that if you think, okay, I'll do a bit of software hacking, you can sit down and over a couple of weeks, you put a few bits of code together and you can come up with a program which is useful enough that probably anyone else wouldn't have made it significantly better than you. But if you decide
but it's
to
not, it's all about satisfaction though, isn't it?
But
like,
if you decide to build something yourself,
something that does it.
It's just If you're just doing it just for the pure artistry
well,
of
that's,
the thing,
well, no,
I can't think why you wouldn't just make pots out of clay.
But people who hardware hackers are.
I wish Demi Moore was with me.
I think hardware hackers are to the engineering world that Perl programmers are to the programming world. They're anarchists, basically. They just love playing around within their media.
It's just such a deep interest in hacking in general.
I mean, I know, like, we were taking the piss before... Well, you guys were taking the piss out of me about Make magazine before we started recording this, saying that I'm on a commission. I'm not on a commission.
Well, how come you've just mentioned it twice, then?
It's brilliant. It is, honestly. I mean...
Where can we get it, Jono?
I don't know. All good bookshops. No, I mean, seriously, it's fascinating. From a... I mean, I'm never going to be able to do hardware hacking. I'm not really that way inclined. I'm shit into... I can't... do soldering to lay my fucking life. I'm crap at it, basically. But it's fascinating reading about a guy who built a monorail in his back garden, about people who are building things such as credit cards.
Monorail? How big is his garden?
He must have a big garden.
Or
a very small monorail. A gnome monorail. The mat rail. So, yeah.
There is a fine line between genius and just lunacy, isn't
yeah.
there? And I think building a monorail in your back garden, you've crossed the line.
But, I mean, wouldn't it be great instead of, like, we've got Linux user groups, wouldn't it be great if there was more homebrew hacking groups? People in a garage building weird and crazy things and then demoing them to each other.
Yeah, I mean, when you
I'd
say...
I'd love to do that kind of
when
shit.
When you say hardware hacking, yeah. I tend to think of computer hardware, because a monorail doesn't seem to fall into the category of hardware.
But even that's really cool. I mean, things like... I mean, my brother's very... This is going to sound dope. My brother's very good with his hands.
he learned that from a very young age, didn't you?
My brother's Michael Jackson. it was a joke for Michael Jackson's lawyers. Squeaky bastard. Anyway, he used to build things like steam engines. Not Michael Jackson. My brother used to build things like steam engines in the garage, and he used to build all kinds of things.
Well, how old was he?
Well, it ranged.
27.
it ranged from the age. No! Full size
I'm thinking, quite big steam engine. Like, your parents come home and, like, your 8-year-old's built a full size steam engine.
The flying Yorkshire.
He just crushed the cat on the driver.
No, not a full size one.
But you're talking about this little tiny thing.
Yeah, just actually, literally just nice hitting the mic stand there. He just literally built the engine, and he built things like that, and it's just like all kinds of stuff he'd build. It'd take old motorbike engines and rebuild them into some other kind of weird vehicle.
It's like Meccano, isn't it? Why don't they sell Meccano anymore? Do they sell Meccano anymore?
Yes. Yeah. But it's fascinating.
Do girls use it?
I don't know. Don't start, eh? Cat's going to eat your eyes.
I don't know. I mean, there's a whole different thing between engineering and electronic engineering.
Yes.
You know, I mean, engineering is all kind of NAND gates and stuff like that, and engineering is all...
I don't think there necessarily
steam and
is.
...electricity and fucking valves and flanges.
But it's all about being creative, isn't it, with technology.
Yeah.
And that's what hacking is. Hacking's being creative with technology.
So what do you suggest that we do about this?
I just think...
Suggest we go out and buy a copy of... That's Make Magazine.
Make subscriptions at LookRadio.org.
Three times in one episode.
Let's make at JonoBacon.org.
No, I just think we should, if we all talk about it a bit more, I'd love to see, like, for example...
It would be great to see a resurgence of that in all seriousness.
Well, I mean, look at, what's his name, Andy?
Who, did you ever have a chemistry set as a kid?
I did, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you did, didn't you, Mac?
Of course I did.
you invented nuclear fusion in your back garden, didn't you?
I was a chemist, I read chemistry at university for the first year.
The only reason you study chemistry at university, in my opinion... is so you can make your own drugs.
It wasn't for girls, was it?
When I arrived at university, I was sharing a room with a guy called Al.
Yeah.
Right, so I...
did he say, you can call me Al.
That's why he was called Al. His name's actually Ross.
Right. It's all very complicated. Help. Don't worry about it.
F1. But,
I arrived into the room, dumped my bags and everything. My mum went. It's on the first day, and Al arrived.
Is this university?
Yeah.
Okay.
Al arrived.
Oh, your mum took you to university.
And we're doing the first introductions and everything, and I said, oh, I'm reading chemistry. And he said, all right, does that mean you've got access to pipes and shit? So I could build a bomb. You know, first conversation we ever had.
And then you went, see your mum.
No, my mum had already gone at this stage. He went, see your mum.
Thing is, though,
and lo, it was so many times during the year.
You know that guy now, Lug Andy, who built the 3D scanner? Who's going to be at Lug Radio
Live? Boy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he built Lug Radio.
.org/live.
This guy, for those who aren't familiar with him, basically built a device which scans 3D objects.
We talked about this
into a 3D model. Did we?
Yeah.
We mentioned him as talking at Radio Live. But he built this from scratch with fucking duct tape and lasers.
For about 30 quid.
And it's incredible. And he wrote the software to interface it. I mean, he wrote it in Visual Basic, but he's porting it over to Linux. But it's still innovative.
Will it run on Mono?
It's not .NET. But, you know, you love Mono, hey, don't you?
I don't have the objections that certain red-headed people have to it.
But it's a cool thing. And what amazed me about it was not that he'd done it, but that it didn't sound that difficult to do, the hardware side of it. You know, he just went and he bought some lasers and pointed them in. He wrote lots of complicated software to do all the interpretation of points.
But he made the physical stuff sound very simple, didn't
he? Yeah. And I thought, wow, I imagine that'd be really, really impossible. And
it is fascinating stuff. So people, let us know what you're working on. If you're doing any hardware hacking, tell us. Send us an email to show@lugradio.org. And if you want to come and talk about it at Lug Radio Live,
and if
let us
you've
know.
Built a particularly good bong, send it to ack@cryogenics.org.
Bong. Well, we're loads of pipes coming out.
This is the Ubuntu release party at Steve's in Netherlands, Australia. And the Ubuntu release process sucks ass. This is Kurt again. We're at the Ubuntu Hori release party, and we're arguing about how to pronounce Ubuntu, and we sound like a couple of monkeys. So I think African things should make it more pronounceable. And this is too long. So bye.
So last week we had an angry minute, and it seemed to go down extremely well.
We were angry. Very angry.
In fact, Matt wasn't very angry, which is a bit bizarre.
No.
Anyway,
he's been off his food.
If I remember, I was a little bit angry about the clipboard, which is just so broken. It's unbelievable.
The clipboard.
Crazy.
Okay.
Yep. And we had a letter about the clipboard.
We did.
Yeah, it was on the forums.
Right, was it on the forums?
Okay. I'm just going to agree with anyone.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it either.
Some bloke posted the forum and said, hey, there's a really small little 5K GNOME program which fixes it.
This isn't the K clipboard thing, is it?
No. Right, this is a GNOME.
GNOME program, yeah, sorry.
Right?
Yeah.
And no, it doesn't. Fuck off.
We're still angry. The clipboard's still broke.
I'm angry about how this bloke is going around pimping how this thing fixes all the problems when it actually doesn't.
Not sounding angry, Ack.
Because I went back and I found the discussion about it on the GNOME developers mailing list. When this bloke invented this thing.
Oh, right.
This little bit of software which, essentially, when you copy something, it copies it to itself. So then when you quit the original program, it's still there because it's in this other thing, yeah? Don't know why I'm gesturing with my fucking hands. None of you can see it.
We can. Bastard.
Anyway, right. This bloke went to the GNOME developers list and went, I've written this thing. Look, it solves all the clipboard problems. And everyone went, no, it fucking doesn't. And this bloke went, it does. It's brilliant. And they went, no, it doesn't. And this is why, right? The idea behind...
Because the knee bone's connected to the...
Shin bone. the idea.
Hang on, that's a bit random. What was that? get on with it anyway.
The reason why X clipboard copy and paste works the way it does is because when you say I copy this, when you try and paste it in another program, the second program is meant to say to the first program, I'd like
what's
that
selected?
Thing,
right?
And then the other program goes, well, okay, I've got this thing. I've got it in a variety of different formats. What would you like? You can have it in HTML, you can have it in RTF, you can have it as an image, you can have it as plain text. What do you want?
Yeah.
And then the second program goes, oh, I'd like it in RTF, because I understand that, please. And then it gives it in RTF, and then you get formatted text in program two. The problem with the clipboardy program this bloke wrote is either it needs to grab it in all possible formats from program one, in case program one shuts down, which is bollocks, because then it eats all your fucking memory by having the thing on the clipboard in 18 different formats, or it only grabs it in plain text, at which point it completely fucking defeats the purpose of the content negotiation.
To be honest, plain text is good enough.
It's not, not.
It's a fucking damn sight better than we got at the minute.
Well,
it's
no
better
text.
Than nothing.
No text.
Got the no text clipboard.
But the
runs in no K memory. Uses no resources.
Executes an infinite loop in 5 seconds. The whole point of the XOID, this content negotiation thing, it's really clever. Because you can copy text out of a web page and drop it into your word processor, and it comes across formatted. That's brilliant.
It's slightly good.
Crap away by having a clipboard thing.
It's slightly good, but that also annoys me because having it formatted already, because it comes over sometimes in the wrong format or something you don't want. And how difficult is it to select some text and say I want them a bit bold?
Well, no, that's the, if it's just you want to copy the text and have it bold, that's it. But it will copy the font. It will copy individual formatting within the text. It will copy images that are included in the text.
What if I didn't want that? So quite a lot of the time on Windows, I find myself copying it to
Notepad and then copying it back out on Notepad. Yeah, I do that all the fucking time.
So first question is, why doesn't GNOME have a clipboard? GNOME itself, not the applications in GNOME.
Well, this thing is the GNOME clipboard, and that's why. Because if you have a third-party clipboard process, it has to grab stuff from the application you're copying
in all possible
formats. Which is bollocks.
Well, how does it work on Windows then? Is that what it does?
The way Windows works is they've got a clipboard which copies it in plain text, and that's it.
Yeah.
But it's also, it does a content negotiation thing if the program you've got is still open.
Ah.
So if I close the program, I'm just going to get plain text.
Yeah,
if you copy it pretty much, I think the clipboard is prepared to grab it in sort of two formats or something.
Clipboard's still making me angry.
The thing is, though,
what's making you angry?
I don't know, really. The clipboard thing makes me angry, because I experienced it this week.
Did you?
Yeah. I'll tell you what makes me fucking angry.
Oh, you look angry.
I'll tell you what makes me angry. I'll tell you what fucking makes me livid.
Release your anger.
I'll tell you. Three words, right?
Let Matt go.
Sir Clive Sinclair.
Bastard.
Why?
No, that's not fair. It should be four words.
Sir Clive Sinclair's PA.
Don't tell me what you're going to tell me.
What? He can't make it.
He can't make it.
He can't come to Lug Radio Live.
We've had the bloody flipping...
See, he's so angry, he's speechless.
Well, his PA, who is...
driving a Sinclair C5.
Well, I don't want to be rude to the lady, but, you know...
She's a biatch.
And didn't get on well with her, the snotty cow. I mean, she basically was completely not going to help us out.
I'll pass your details on to Sir Clive.
And, you know, I'd ring up and I'd say, hi, I'm from an organisation. Who are you from? I'm just about to tell you. Just wait, I know it's exciting, but just give me a few seconds. Yeah, so that pissed me off. I reckon Sir Clive is a nice guy.
But he's just getting
but
to
But she's the firewall.
You've got to get through the firewoman.
Yeah, so steer clear. So, Sir Clive Sinclair, Dominic Diamond. Denied.
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 Thing I'm angry about, right? Totem fucking crashes.
No, it doesn't.
Now, in particular, Totem crashes...
My Totem
Totem crashes
crash.
Quite a lot anyway,
you need to be more specific.
Do you mean Totem the dog or Totem the media player?
Totem the media player.
Not the dog.
That is Totem the dog.
Totem. Wasn't it Totem from The Wizard of Oz?
What?
That was Toto, you dozy twat.
That was the Hi-Yo Silver thing, wasn't it? Lone Ranger.
No, that was Tonto.
Oh, right.
Whatever!
For fuck's sake!
No, Totem doesn't crash!
Isn't your totem the sack that holds your knackers?
That's your scrotum!
Right. All of you shut up!
We don't say nagger, we say fucking...
Totem!
Isn't totem the style of music in the 50s, you know, with like loads of divas? No, that's Motown.
That was the 60s anyway.
I'm gonna hit you if you don't shut up.
Now, shut the fuck up. Totem, the media player. I was having problems playing DVDs. So I'd put in a DVD and tell it to play, and it wouldn't work.
Okay.
It crashed. So, ran it from an Xterm, and it chucked up some fucking X error about bad alloc.
No, I've had that.
So I thought, now, that's shit, but Totem crashes all the time. So I tried it with G-Zine, because my Totem's back
in the G-string. My Totem never crashes.
Right, now hang on. I tried using G-Zine, crashed, same error. I tried using Ogle, which is definitely a different code source.
So is it your libstv thingy, whatever
it
is?
No, it's not the libdvd CSS.
That's it,
Having done some research on this...
You've done a lot of research this week, hasn't he?
It seems shit.
Anybody who thinks he's had some time off sick or something.
I think it's a bug in X.org.
Okay.
The problem is...
Submit your bug then.
I found quite a few people who've submitted a bug to... There's one in the Red Hat Bugzilla, for example, and there's one in the X.org Bugzilla.
You looked in the Red Hat Bugzilla?
Yep. No because way. I googled for this bug and it came up.
Ah.
And they keep saying this bug is fixed in 6.8.2 or whatever. So every time I get an Ubuntu update, I think this time it will be fixed. And every time it fucking well isn't fixed.
See, now, there's your problem.
Now, conceivably, I must admit, and this is where we segue neatly into the Lug Radio Guilty Minute, I haven't actually submitted a bug to Ubuntu.
Bastard.
But there is a reason.
No, you're Jono, a bastard. Go and get the nails.
Nail the bastard by his invisible... Fucking bitch.
Ginger scrotum.
No, here's
the... ginger totem to the wall.
Here's the fucking Tonto. Reason, yeah? I know it's really important to submit bugs. Totally agree with that.
Why haven't you done it then?
But I don't want to submit a bug which goes, totem doesn't work, you have to fix it, right?
Actually, I agree with this because I don't submit bugs. I feel guilty because I can't fix it and it feels like I'm saying, can you fix it for me?
Well, I feel a bit like that. What I do is I don't mind submitting bugs, but I like them to be reasonably well researched. So I need to submit a bug report which says, I've got this bug, it references, it looks like it's the same bug as this bug in Red Hat and this bug in the X.org Bugzilla. Now, the X.org said it was fixed in this version, but I've got a version newer than that from Ubuntu Hori and it doesn't seem to be fixed. Could you look at that? But it needs to be a detailed bug report.
You guys just say it crashes.
Yeah, developers bang on and on and on and on about how we need to submit bug
in
reports
general.
That don't just go, it crashes, it work, you wanker. Well, and I agree with them, but I haven't got the time to do a proper research bug report. I haven't submitted a bug report.
I think a lot of it.
So is a short bug report better than no bug report at all, is the question?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what you submit in your bug report. I mean, I submit a lot of bug reports, mainly because I tend to run Hori, so I'm getting...
Lots of bugs.
Potentially lots of bugs. So if I get a bug...
No, because you're running Ubuntu.
Shut up. You shiny head bastard. anyway, you know, you get some... Like, for example, about a week ago, I did a dist upgrade, and my laptop screen... wouldn't support,
exploded.
It wouldn't support it wouldn't support my normal resolution.
What hardware was that?
This is a Sony Vaio.
Okay.
It normally supports 1270 by 800 or whatever it
is. Widescreen.
Yes.
Widescreen, 1280.
No short screen. It's wide.
Short screen.
No, it's fucking not.
Anyway. So it worked in various other resolutions. So I basically submitted a bug report. I outlined what resolutions it worked in, what resolutions it didn't work in. I posted my X log, and that I considered a decent bug report. That's not necessarily as expansive as maybe Ack is talking about, but I think that's a better than no bug report at all. But then also, let's not forget, if you submit a bug report and it's compelling and it's, you know, it's obviously a problem, then they'll set it to need info, and then they'll typically say, could you do this, could you do that?
Yeah.
And so long as you're responsive, I think it's really satisfying when you submit a bug report.
Actually, boys will be proud of me.
What did you do, right?
You will be very
proud.
Tell us more. But at the...
That's it, put your hands on your thumb.
At a recent 2600 meeting I attended, we had a bit of a... Two of my friends came down and they had laptops they wanted to put Linux on. And guess what I put on there?
Ubuntu.
Hori. Hori.
Really? Yeah. Nice.
And one of them, of course, with his wireless wasn't working because it was Broadcom.
Right.
So one of the other guys... So one of the other guys got TCP wrapper on there. Not TCP. And it's quite simple to set up, actually, and it works a treat.
Fuck no.
About a week later, his mousepad stopped working. But nevertheless, I installed two versions of Ubuntu. Well, I didn't, but
at least you didn't install Inspire on it.
Well, I'm neither angry nor guilty about that, so that's excellent. Well done, Aid.
Hang on a second, we all feel better now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aid.
Well done, Aid. The Ubuntu makes us feel better.
Tell Uncle Aid your problems.
Uncle Aid and his bald head.
Cool thing I saw recently was the wobbly Windows thing.
Very cool.
Hang on a minute. For people who haven't seen this, this is all to do with all the new X shit. There's Cairo and there's some other fucking thing.
X Comp Manager.
That's not in Ubuntu, is it? That's on a Red Hat.
It is.
And you saw it?
Yep.
Oh my God.
You know what? Credit where credit's due, right? I have a point to make.
Do you?
I do, yes. Yeah. As if it's completely unrehearsed.
Young bacon.
The point is that Red Hat have been doing some really good work in this, and...
Don't say recently.
They have been doing some very good work, okay? But one of the points I think Seth Nickel made, or I think it was Seth or it was Havoc or someone, basically said that there's some really great work going on at Red Hat, but they're really bad at promoting it. They're really bad about blogging it. They're really bad about sort of telling people about it. Whereas every 5 minutes you've got fucking Nat Friedman saying, hey guys, look at this, it's really cool, you know. So it's kind of, you know,
I think we've maybe been a bit harsh in Red Hat, because there's obviously some good stuff going on there. Although Wobbly Windows is utterly pointless.
It's a test case.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's brilliant.
It demonstrates the power of the thing, you know, which is cool.
Of love.
Doesn't MacOS do a similar Windows squeezy thingy?
Sorry?
Doesn't MacOS do a similar thingy?
It does.
I saw it earlier on your piece of crap.
No, that's a Mac.
Same thing.
Did you guys see the video of Miguel doing the mono thing, and also Nat doing the demo of
XGL? I tried to watch it, but it was all breaking up for me. So
that was fairly close after the date, wasn't it, when it was released? So it's probably the bandwidth. But
could well be.
They've
got a large pipe, however.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Now he thinks about my large pipe.
He is. Look, he's gone quiet.
I'm thinking about it. No, I mean, there's an awful lot of cool stuff, but we've talked about cool stuff on Rug Radio before.
We have.
And our response to it has almost always been, yeah, it'll be good when it actually exists. I mean, take the wireless network switcher applet thing. Where
hang on, we've had
all the wireless
about
stuff.
That. Wi-Fi radar and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, there are people out there doing this kind of thing. But every time it's come, what we've said is, it'll be good when it actually happens, rather than just being some weirdo technology demonstration where you have to compile it out of CVS yourself and hook it into GNOME yourself. It'll be good when it gets delivered by Fedora Core, or by Ubuntu, or by whatever it is you choose to use. What's different about all this Wobbly Windows stuff?
I think what's interesting, though, is that in terms of XGL...
Fun fact, it's fucking cool as bollocks.
The thing is, because that's luminosity, isn't it?
Metacity, however
you want to pronounce it.
It's supposed to be the state of being meta rather than beyond a city.
Right. city with additional information. A meta city. apparently Luminosity is like basically that window manager hacked to support this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas XGL is OpenGL support actually in X.org.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure how they fit together. But one thing that is interesting, you say about, yeah, you're right, we've said, when's it all going to actually come onto our desktops, you know, and you don't have to compile it all from CVS. Whereas, I think it's Novell Linux Desktop 10, which is due out in another 6 months, 8 months, or whatever, is actually going to incorporate XGL.
Cool.
Because they employed the XGL hacker to do it.
Right.
In the same way that Red Hat employed Keith Packard. Oh, no, HP employed Keith Packard, don't they?
Yes, HP.
Now, hang on. Do I think HP employed Keith Packard because they're Hewlett Packard?
No, they did. Yeah.
He's right, okay.
Owen Wilson or someone like that. They employ at Red Hat. It was the guy who was doing the Wobbly Windows thing.
Yeah, I mean, Seth Nickel
looked like a devil, by the way.
Bear with me. I mean, I don't want to denigrate the work these people are doing. It's all really, really outstandingly fucking cool.
I want to know
when I can get the coolness without running GarGNOME and compiling it all myself every day or whatever.
If it isn't an outget, you fooked, aren't you?
Yeah, basically. Just not for stuff that's as low level as my X server.
Yeah,
I'm not going to compile it myself. I mean, I don't mind compiling little applications and running them, but I'm not prepared to compile the whole fucking stack.
Yeah, you wouldn't compile libc.
just because I can't afford to have my machine fuck up and spend 2 days debugging it because I need it for work. To do things on,
not
for work at my job.
Okay. Did you see the thing? Obviously, you didn't, Aid, if you didn't watch the video, but did you see the thing with the... there was a demo on the XGL thing that was talked about by the guy who wrote XGL. Basically, it's very similar to the MacOS X way of doing it, where you switch between desktops or you switch between
the cube
users,
thing.
The cube thing. And they've implemented that in XGL. And it shows the kind of potential. And there's like been loads of white papers and theories about, you know, like using light and colours to symbolise certain things in the desktop.
Yeah.
So it's exciting because it opens up a whole new possibility in terms of usability.
Yeah. Definitely,
and
yeah.
In many ways, my enthusiasm about Project Looking Glass was misplaced back then. It's really, this is what I'm excited about.
It's just cool new display stuff. I think the Project Looking Glass people, the interview that we did with them, I think what they were trying to express, the impression of having listened back to it after I saw this XGL crap and all that, is that they were saying, you know, it's kind of a new way of getting at stuff. You know, it's not a total evolution away from Windows icons, menus and pointers like we've had for the last 15 years, but it is an evolution of it. You know, it's an improvement. It's the first major change we've seen since, you know, if you look at Riscos, it basically looks like Windows, and that's 15 years in between.
Absolutely, yeah.
And this is something of a real change. And the Mac people probably got there first, to some extent, but they haven't made...
Maybe Project Looking Glass kind of inspired these changes.
I reckon it did, because...
I think the same kind of thought in people's heads inspired both Project Looking Glass and all this stuff. People want to do really cool, whizzy displays.
Yeah,
stuff.
Sure. The kind of things you see in the movies, but you
just think, movie-os. Everyone wants movie-os.
Yeah, exactly.
When you type in your password, it prints up password in massive writing on your screen. And every time you press a key, it fills in a big red
The whole screen turned into an envelope and you've got an email.
It's movie-os.
It's nice when you're hacking as well, as in breaking into computers. And, you know, when you're hacking, you don't just, you know, get SSH access to a particular part of the machine. You actually go down a tunnel.
Yeah.
3D tunnel.
Yeah, that always happens.
Because 3D tunneling, you know, 3D visual tunnels over the internet, you know, is a reality
reality.
Well, you know, I mean, it could be with XGL.
Best thing
about MovieOS is it enforces 5 characters or less in passwords.
But, I think it's fascinating. What's interesting, though, is that the XGL thing, it seems such a simple idea.
What do you think about this ages
exactly
ago?
I mean, basically, you know, Nat Freeman announced, the first time I saw it was in Nat Freeman's blog. He mentioned it, and then everybody else started talking about it. And Seth Nichols' blog really made it come alive with the demos and stuff. But the guy, if you read what Nat wrote about, it was just a blog entry. It was a mailing list post just saying, by the way, I thought it would be a good idea if I made an addition to the X server where everything's rendered as OpenGL. Wrote this addition, made it a switch so you can turn it on in X.org, committed it to CVS. And there's this massive thread with all of the cream of the crop of the X programming community saying, that's fucking awesome. And it seems like such a simple idea, but it could potentially revolutionise things. And I'm really fascinated by what we can, it's innovation, what we can do in terms of usability. I think it's opened up a whole new can of worms as to what we can do, not just copying what's already gone.
It's great to see Linux innovating more than the big boys now.
Yes,
definitely. I mean, I don't know if you think that's always been the way or...
I don't know. I mean, I think it's more that the innovation is close to the centre than it used to be. You know, before, if you looked at things, if you looked at something new that Windows did, something new that macOS did, whatever, you could almost always say... you can do that on Linux already. Some guy put together a thing on SourceForge 18 months ago that did that, but it got to version 0.1, they never did any more development on it, they never really took it as far as they could.
This is your pet rant, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, now you've got... Exactly. But you've got guys now at Novell, at Red Hat, they're hacking this stuff together, which means it'll probably actually happen.
Which means corporate stuff is good.
It's got a play. The thing is,
you went very quiet then, young man.
Because I don't want this to go into another 15-minute argument.
The thing is, I mean, Should
we save it for another show? End of the show already, so let's get straight onto the emails. We've had
shitload of emails.
I tell you what, we're going to have one mail sacks or something like that.
It is honestly, listeners.
Oh, I've got my mail sack.
I've never want to see yours or yours mail sack.
I've got a bulging mail sack.
It must be my mail sack is full.
Anyway, moving on. No, it's great to hear
you.
Hey,
are you ready to empty my mail sack?
No, actually, surprisingly enough.
Okay, moving swiftly on to the letter.
Yes.
Go, Mr.
We absolutely love getting your emails, so please keep sending them in.
show@lugradio.org.
And we're going to kick off with...
Keep sending them in.
Shut up!
Keep sending them in.
Okay, so we're going to kick off with Colin Johnson, and he says, hi, boys.
Hi.
And I always think of that poster when someone says, hi, boys.
What poster? You
know, the one, Eva Herzegovina or whatever,
that's the one,
with
the
tits out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like. Score. Does he look like her?
I doubt it.
It's called
However,
what
he
do you
does
think?
He does say, I'm listening to show number 12, season 2, and it's fucking brilliant.
Did he say that?
Yeah,
nice. Well done, Colin.
Nice.
I like him already.
Would you like Matt's job?
The second thing. The next thing he says, two comments.
Why two?
Anyway.
It's a natural law of the universe, I tell you.
Yeah, like your ass. Bullocks. Carry on.
Anyway, first point.
Bollocks.
Two bits of fat.
two bollocks. Carry on.
If women had more than two breasts, would men grow an extra arm?
I doubt.
Okay.
Shut up. Just get on with it, you bum.
Would you have got an extra
I really love the angry minute about wireless and Linux. I'm really frustrated about the fact that I can't move between my home and my net my work network without having to reconfigure my wireless.
Ah, do
keep
like
talking it, about it, and it might just get fixed. Now, didn't we have some posts about this?
We did.
With the Wi-Fi radar and...
Yeah, some guy mentioned Wi-Fi radar. There's a few other things. If you look on forums.logradio.org, there's a whole thread...
Forums?
Forums.logradio.org. There's a whole thread dedicated to someone saying, yeah, I really sympathise with the wireless problem. There's a load of guys piling on going, no, you're wrong. This package solves it.
Yeah.
So, I think Wi-Fi radar got mentioned about 8 times.
Yeah.
So get along to the forums.
And his
forums.
Second point,
radio.org.
Because there is only 2 points. As my neighbour in the north, who wrote about offering 3 pence, spelling it P-E-N-T-S, I'm wondering if he's created a new...
What the hell word is that?
What the hell word
Let
is
me
that?
Read it out, you bald bastard.
So I didn't go to university.
Portmanteau.
No.
Portmanteau word.
What the hell is a portmanteau?
Two words mixed together.
Combining okay. pence and cents.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's basically what he's saying.
A portmanteau word. Lewis,
we have a word
Lewis
here
Carroll.
That can work on both sides right. of the Atlantic. So yeah, pence and cents, pence.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Yeah, excellent.
We do like the email and we like Colin now.
Yeah,
he's
we do.
He's a boy.
All nice right, one. Okay.
You go next.
I've got mail here from Thomas Pearl from Austria.
What's the programming?
Hello, Lug Radio team. He bought an iPod Mini.
Does he make necklaces?
Would you like one?
No. I think he makes pearl, actually. He apparently bought an iPod Mini.
Boo!
But he says the fact that it is supported by Linux made my decision for it, else I'd probably stick with Minidisc. And he learned about podcasting, started searching for Linux podcasts, found us.
Fantastic.
And,
he
says,
and then the feed didn't work.
yeah.
gotcha.
As far as I'm aware, the feed did work, but I need to look at it again just in case it hasn't. It's all Matt's fault.
yeah, anyway. It is Matt's fault.
He says, I'm listening to your show when driving to school, and it's very cool. Only bad things is I sometimes start
is
laughing,
teacher?
And people stare at me, wondering why I laugh and I'm supposed to be listening to music.
A lot of people is he a teacher or is he a student?
Driving to school by bus.
He's a bus
driver. Maybe he drives the bus.
I didn't hear the bus thing.
No, I think because he's Austrian, he may be saying that he goes to school on the bus. So he's not a teacher.
This incidentally...
Did you watch Dumber and Dumber when she says, I'm Austrian, and he went, throw another shrimp on the bar.
Incidentally, this thing about people travelling to work on public transport, listening to Lug Radio and laughing, and
I
people looking at them silly, I think we need to name this. I think we should call this Lug Radio Syndrome. Because this is an ailment in Lug Radio listeners.
The stupid thing is, I do that.
Really?
Yeah.
I drive to work and no one looks at me
stupid. To episodes and I'm bursting out laughing.
I do. I mean, seriously, yeah. I laugh at all the funny shit that I said in the previous episode. But yeah,
I think I'm really great.
If you suffer from Lug Radio Syndrome, let us know.
Yeah, let us know
when it happens.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, this bloke says, coming from Slack, where I recently tried Ubuntu on my notebook, and it seems to me to be so great.
It is.
Maybe you also analyse Ubuntu and other distros well in an upcoming show, and in fact we do. Next week, we think.
Yes.
We're doing a summary of lots of distributions.
We're going to wait till Matt gets back, so it's a bit more balanced.
Yeah, so you can talk about Linux.
So it's not just Ubuntu,
and drinking in the jungle.
Incidentally, we need to play Adam's jingle.
We need to play Adam's jingle.
Adam, we're going
to
play it this week.
People, check this out. Ubuntu,
the drink is in a Congo. Way down deep in the middle of the Congo, a hippo took an apricot, a guava, and a mango. He stuck it with the others and he does a dainty tango. The rhino said, I know, we'll call it Ubuntu! They drink it in the Congo.
Isn't that awesome?
Fantastic. Nice one,
Adam's. We like Adam's Jungle. We
thank Ak for the lyrics.
If you listen to the jingle, to last week's show, it was the last show 2 weeks ago, there was actually, the jingle was in there, but not many people heard it. So it is in there.
Thank you very much, Adam Sweet.
Okay,
so next email.
Next email. This is from Ethan Mallove.
You can't laugh at the bloke's name. That's really harsh.
Ethan. Shut up. Ethan Mallove. Or it might be Ethan Mallove. He ate my love. Good show. It's so good, in fact, I'm downloading all the archives, unless they expire, so
good
I don't
man.
Miss anything.
They're not going to expire, because they're on archive.org.
This is another thing. They are on archive.org. There was a guy
all
in the
of season two is, anyway.
There was a guy on the IRC channel that I met on Saturday at the weekend.
Did you meet him IRL?
During the week.
Did you meet him IRL?
What?
In real life.
In real life.
Oh, shut your face.
God, it's a long time since I heard that.
He was doing a Lug Radio marathon that day, and he listened to...
Was he really?
Like, running a marathon?
Yeah. He listened to virtually, I think, the entire second season.
in one day, something ridiculous. So it's great to see these marathons going on. He says, my only comment is I prefer the serious segments over the endless silliness that segues the seriousness.
You might not want to listen to this bit where we read your letter out then.
Thanks very much, Ethan, my love. yes, that's about it.
So. Cool, okay, I've got one from Adam Wilson. He's talking about, do you remember in the last episode when we talked about ripping CDs? In fact, you talked about it, didn't you, Mac?
I did.
You talked about how tremendously slow it was.
Yeah, I think
compared to Windows,
I think that was that me?
No, it was me.
Oh, was it?
I was talking about
apologize,
it.
Apologise, yeah. Lord Ack. Anyway, Adam writes in and says, I think you might be overlooking something fairly obvious about CD ripping under Linux and Windows.
Just who wrote in?
This is Adam Wilson.
All right.
Williamson, sorry.
Okay.
Just about everything to rip CDs for Linux uses CD paranoia libs in some way and turns on all of the paranoia, i.e., error correction options by default.
Tinfoil hats.
Exactly, yeah. Lots of Windows CD rippers.
Anti-black helicopter mode.
They just rip as fast as they damn well can, at near the rated speed of the drive. The problem is this, that it's not accurate. Unless your CD is utterly pristine, you will get what you get isn't the same as what's on the disk. If you use a good Windows ripper, i.e., like EAC, with copy protection enabled, then you get the same kind of speeds as Linux apps do. And if you use a big bloated Linux ripper like Grip and disable error correction, then you get the same blazing speeds.
So,
right,
that's
yeah.
the reason why.
So, error correction. If you need it, turn it on. If you don't, turn it off.
It's slower because it's better. Right. Next email. Email from Michael Sykes.
Or Mickey L.
He's
a cool bloke, and again,
he is cool, but I don't know how to pronounce his name.
He might be.
Sykes.
He might be.
But as
before
in
you
Sykes.
Say this, he might be talking at Lug Radio Live if he can get down, because he lives in Norway, somewhere ridiculous. He lives in Holland.
Norway's not ridiculous.
No. I mean, somewhere far away, you bald bastard. So, fingers crossed he might be coming down. So what did he
bald
say?
Okay, good
what he actually said was, Ack, you fat twat, you wrong about gnome and evolution.
Does he actually put it like that?
No, he doesn't. I'm paraphrasing, but I claimed that that gnome depended on evolution, or at least on evolution data server, and what he says is, that's an enormous load of bullshit. It works perfectly fine without it. Don't get me wrong, I do agree you're missing some functionality with that evolution data server, but as I said before, it doesn't have to be this way. You could even recode Firefox, Thunderbird, some other app to use EDS. So you could have Thunderbird data server.
So how would you get rid of it then, if you need to get rid of it?
Apt-get remove evolution data server. And then nice. It goes away and nothing else depends on it. So this is a full normal Hori installation. I can easily remove evolution data server without losing the basic Nomos functionality. Actually, to prove it, I'm willing to write a simple mail client for you guys, which integrates with Clock Applet and or EDS.
Hang on a minute.
Michael, don't get me wrong, I really appreciate the offer, but... I would much rather see a Thunderbird extension which does it.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Otherwise it's just one more mail client. But I think that's a brilliant offer, and I'd love to see Thunderbird data server.
Go for it, dude.
Or Thunderbird talking to evolution data server.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael, do it for us. We will hail you into next week.
We will hail you. That'd be fantastic. He says, anyway, like always, keep up the great work. Let that noise coming. So thank you very much for the correction. I was wrong, and I admit it. So, next email.
Incidentally, by the way, before you hit the next email, he talked about Hori there. Have you boys come to Hori yet?
Yep.
I was on Hori ages ago.
Is it actually released yet?
No.
No, it's released.
You said you weren't going to go to it till it's fully released.
I know, I was lying.
It's released in 2 days. It was supposed to be released today, which is Wednesday the...
Okay, that's enough about it.
Yeah, 6th.
No, very, very briefly, the reason I went to it is because I got a new laptop about 2 weeks ago, and it seemed stupid to me to install Water when Hori was this close to release. Mm-hmm. I was still running Water on my desktop at that point, and I had no intention
of
upgrading.
Do you use Synaptic Touchpad?
Yes.
Is it still working?
Yes.
Incidentally, Hori will be out by the time you listen to this, so go and download it.
Go get yourself a Hori.
Right, we had an email from Ray Boozen, or Booeason. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce that. He basically, he's basically offered us a mirror in space. I'm not entirely sure if that's been taken up, because I don't deal with a mirror.
He's offered
personally.
Us a mirror in space.
He's offered a large mirror in space. That's right.
Fantastic.
Knobend. So, yeah, he's offered some mirroring space. But we had an email from a guy called Sitsof Wheeler. Sit Sophie Wheeler, I think that is. He says, hi there. As a Lug Radio listener, I and several other people were wondering whether you would be interested in presenting a talk about Lug Radio at the UK's Unix and Open Systems User Group conference in Swansea. We've submitted a proposal. If one of us can get down there to do a talk, that would be great.
I think the globetrotter amongst us would be you, Johnny.
I submitted the proposal, but I'm going to be in Germany. So I won't be able to make it.
Well, if our talk is accepted, we'll attempt to get someone down there to talk about
it. It would be great to get down. So
good stuff.
Okay, on to the next one then. David Madeley's written in.
Yes, David Madeley. Hi, guys.
He said, so, someone complained in episode 12. Now, honestly, did somebody complain in episode 12?
Someone wrote in.
Yeah, someone complained in episode 12 that there's no documentation for Gnome. I just want to suggest to the writer that perhaps he should bloody well write it.
In capital letters, I'm assuming.
In capital letters, yeah. I would love for someone to contribute some documentation rather than leaving it all up to the same group of people. I will print out their names in capital letters in the news file with stars all around it. David. So yep. There you go. If you're not a coder, get documenting.
Well, in the writers, although I completely agree with David and all his points of view on that, in the letter writer's defence, I've tried to use GNOME Python, and there isn't any documentation for it, and I can't get started with it because there isn't any, and I can't get started with writing documentation because I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I don't understand
you need to start using a proper programming language then, don't you?
It's like a circle with
a
knife.
That Python, for God's sake.
A vicious circle.
So, yeah, have you got any more?
I have.
I've got one more.
I've got one more. Since we're talking... I've got a very quick one and a slightly longer one.
Well, get your arse in gear. We're losing time.
Right. Very quickly, Canan Gowden wrote in to say...
We've got a lot of international listeners these days, don't we?
Yes.
We have. We talked about Java, C-sharp and Python and how they could be used for writing the core GNOME components. And he says, C-sharp and Java can both be very fast. Python is fast enough for many applications, but only because it doesn't do the heavy lifting. Much of the Python core library, along with the important libraries, implemented in C. Had those libraries be implemented in Python, things would be much slower, and therefore Python's too slow for the GNOME core. That's total bollocks.
No, I agree with him.
No. The point being that I agree with him that the important libraries are implemented in C, but they're already implemented in C.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't have to, you wouldn't re-implement those libraries in Python in order to write the GNOME core in Python. You'd write it in the existing Python now. Some of the stuff's in C. Totally agree with you.
Yep, completely.
What's your point?
Yeah.
Shut up, GNOME boy.